Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Now, wait a minute.
Here's John Williams.
Boy, do we have a lot of ground to cover today. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above the Chicago River. It's a nice view today. It wasn't really on Saturday or Sunday, but here's Monday. I'll take this. Domati, before you run away from the anchor desk, is Domati still over there? Domati, are you still got your headphones on?
Yes, yes.
That song that you mentioned R. Kelly put out, which sings to the Sun-Times, formerly the Sun-Times, Jim DeRogatis,
yeah,
the rock critic. Did that song just come out, you said?
Just came out this morning.
And you said it's 19 songs or 19 minutes?
What 19 minutes long, and he is venting about everything under the sun.
So he's unloading a lot of frustrations he had, and I guess in some part of that song, he goes after DeRogatis, huh?
Yeah, for about four bars or so. He's like, you built a whole career off of accusing me. Why'd you do this to me? He goes after Steve Harvey, Tom Joyner, a few radio personalities. He says, I respect you guys, but why are you lashing out against another black man? He talks about him being sexually assaulted when he up to the age of 14 by a family member. And he actually admits to having this harem of women that he, well, I don't know if harem because he's not married to them, but having this group of women that call him their boyfriend, and but
yeah,
he
right.
denies that it's a cult and asks, what is the definition of a sex cult? That's what he says.
I don't know that that's a question he wants people to answer, but...
Yeah, he doesn't want that.
Can you play that at soundbite one more time? This is the R. Kelly song where he sings to Chicago's Jim DeRogatis of Sound Opinions and other sources. He and Greg Kot are two of the great sort of journalistic assets that Chicago has. So if you've got that audio, play it again.
To Jim DeRogatis or whatever your name is.
Whatever your name.
You've been trying to destroy me for 25 whole years.
25 whole years.
Writing the same stories over and over and over again. Off my name, you done went and made yourself a career.
Not much true about that. DeRogatis is brilliant in his own right. He doesn't need the Kelly story. And maybe the reason that the story has been told over and over the same way all these years is because it was true then and it's true now.
And there were new stories, new details added. Like there's one instance in the most recent story about the sex cult where and DeRogatis reported some of these details, and R. Kelly confirms them in the song, that one of the women who, you know, is part of this cult, the so-called cult, their dad introduced his daughter to R. Kelly at a concert. And in the song, he says, well, you can't get mad at me. You shouldn't have introduced your daughter to me. It didn't work. It didn't work out the way
your
you expected.
14-year-old daughter.
Yeah, you know.
If that's
so.
The girl we're talking about. Here's what Variety says. Veteran reporter Jim DeRogatis is no stranger to strong allegations against R. Kelly. He's the reporter in 2000 who received the sex tape that prosecutors allegedly showed the singer having sex with a 14-year-old girl, and which led to Kelly's highly publicized 2008 trial on child pornography charges. Although the case was ultimately dismissed, multiple allegations of sexual misconduct have surrounded the singer since the mid-90s, including his alleged illegal marriage to singer Aaliyah,
yeah,
when she was 15 years old.
Yes.
And last summer, DeRogatis reported that three sets of parents claim Kelly is holding their daughters in an abusive cult. And ours not digging it. Okay.
I got one more for you. Yeah. I think you'll get a kick out of this.
What's the definition of a sex slave? Go to the dictionary, look it up. Let me know, I'll be here waiting.
Just leave that for you right there, John.
Okay.
Another big thought for you to unpack.
I'm not going to unpack any more of that. We reached out to Jim DeRogatis. Maybe he'll say hello before the show is over. Here's a nice story. Here's a nice tweet from the weekend. One of our listeners over the weekend tweeted this, and I think it's the sort of thing we should hear more of. Jennifer tweeted, I witnessed an older lady board a CTA bus, tries to swipe her Venture card. It's expired. A young woman steps up and says, use mine, and pays for the ride. This is why America is already great. It's not someone behind a desk. It's you. It's me. It's all of us. Hashtag kindness matters. Hooray for you, Jennifer. Thanks for sharing that story. And whoever that person is, good for you and thank you. The president tweeted a lot over the weekend, and we'll get into some of it, but this was one of the interesting tweets. The NFL national anthem debate, the president said on Saturday, is alive and well again. Can't believe it is. Isn't it in the contract that players must stand at attention, hand on heart? The $40 million commissioner must now take a stand. First time kneeling, out of the game. Second time kneeling, out for the season. No pay, said the president, who has time for a lot of subjects these days. Mark Jacob, who you should follow on Twitter, tweeted the following. Here's your reminder that the kneeling NFL players are not protesting the national anthem. They have clearly explained that they are protesting official mistreatment of Black Americans. They consider their protest a patriotic act, an appeal to Americans' sense of fairness. And then he tweeted, if you think the NFL take a knee protests are a statement against the national anthem, maybe you think the 1960s lunch counter sit-ins were a protest against sandwiches. Well put, Mark. So there's just a couple of tweets. One of the president's bombshell tweets was at Iran, and we'll talk more about that in the 2 o'clock hour. But the major story in America today is what happened at Wrigley Field on Sunday. This is clearly the most important news story of the day. This is the way one automated news source put it.
Seriously, don't do what these two Cubs fans did during Sunday's game at Wrigley Field. When going to a baseball game, don't be this guy.
Don't be this guy.
Stealing a baseball from a kid.
So you saw the video, maybe you watched the game live and saw it, or maybe you just followed the immediate tweets and Facebook posts that blasted out into the always marginally fair internet. And in this case, you saw, boy, and if ever somebody was dead to rights, it's this guy, right? The manager of the Cardinals, the third base coach tosses the ball into the stands. And there's a kid there who's about to get it. Kid doesn't get the ball. It rolls under his seat and goes to the row, the second row behind him, where some dude, some muscular, strong dude, grabs the ball. Yeah!
Trying to impress a woman much younger than him.
Hands it to the lady next to him, who doesn't give a rip. She's on her phone. And he goes, yeah! All right, I got the ball from the kid. Stupid kid. And, I mean, there it was. I mean, that's what happened, right? He didn't say stupid kid, but, I mean, the body language did. I got the ball, you didn't. He had no interest in giving it to the kid. So everybody blew up, right? We got to get this kid a ball. Who is this guy? Don't be this guy at a ball game.
Is that really the end of the story, though?
Well, the Cubs even mistook it, right? Or misunderstood it.
How could you not? I mean, I don't want to do a Trump double negative here, but it would be very easy to mistake the full context of that story because of what you saw. Let's remember this the next time we're talking about something that really matters, like a police shooting. But what you saw was unequivocal. Toss the ball to the kid. Kid misses the ball. Guy behind it gets it and doesn't give it back to the kid. Bad guy. Bad things said at this guy. I'll bet that guy had a bad 24 hours. Okay, Steve, what's the rest of the story? I know. That's not the first time that guy tossed a ball into the stand.
Right. Well, the point I was going to make is the Cubs even brought out a ball to the kid because they thought he had gotten ripped off a Javi Baez ball.
Previous to that, a ball had been tossed their way. The guy got it, and he gave it to the kid. In fact, depending on what version of this story you're reading, that guy gave balls to two other kids as well. Maybe two of them to that little boy. But either way, that boy leaves the baseball game with two baseballs, one which that guy had previously given him. So now when yet another ball comes their way, they had, you know, second row seats right there next to the infield. When another ball comes their way, this guy is keeping it, evidently, and who knows what he's going to do. Maybe that's one of the balls he gave to yet another child. But that he didn't hand it to that kid may have been because he had just given that kid a ball previously. That does seem to be the truth. But nobody knew that when you were watching it on TV.
It was clear. you bring up an excellent point. The next time you're judging something and you said a police shooting or whatever,
yeah.
If you don't have all of the video evidence or videotape, this is a good example of how you can see something absolutely incorrectly.
Well, what could have happened that would have changed the story? Well, guess what? He had just given that kid a baseball. Now, listen, I on my on Facebook. We do a daily web poll question at WGNradio.com. We repost it on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. You can find the video there. We asked you if this guy was a bad guy or okay, knowing now what you know. And you may conclude that he's still a bad guy because that ball was clearly intended to go to the little boy. The little boy clearly botched it, and it went to the guy. And the guy clearly wasn't handing it to the little kid. This scene has played out. Now, you know what happened before, but it doesn't change what you just saw. He didn't give it to the kid where that was the intention of the player on the field or the manager on the field.
But you almost knew there was more to the story, too, because the kid and the mother or whoever he was with didn't go, hey, that's my ball.
They
kind of
turned with
that. They're like,
a sad smile on their face, but they didn't seem to, be acting like someone who has just denied the baseball
right.
of a
if
lifetime.
Right, if someone stole a baseball from me, I would have said something.
Hey, fella, but since you just gave us one, maybe I'm not going to bust your chops. And so maybe, that's pretty perceptive of you, Violette, if you thought that the first time you saw it, though.
Well, I was like, huh, that kid just gave up pretty easily.
Like, are you really?
Yeah, I mean, and the mom. I think whoever he was with, if my kid got a baseball stolen from them, I'd be like, hey, jerk, give my kid the ball.
My number is 312-981-7200. The other thing is when you Google a story like this, you will get an unending parade of videos showing big people acting badly around little people. Pucks tossed into the stands, footballs, basketballs, baseballs. In one instance, I think it was a soccer player tossed a shoe to a kid. It's wrestled from the kid. I mean, this happens all the time, right? So you'll be forgiven if you believed that this was another example of that, but it was not.
So I used to have seats where I would get a foul ball or two every year. It was not unusual. Every year I'd get a couple foul balls. And I always would give them away. In fact, I would pick out a kid, like fantasy, like win the lottery, right? Before at the game, when I'd be sitting there, I'd be like, okay, that's the kid I'll give the ball to.
I know what you mean.
And one time I got this foul ball, and I'm giving it to these two kids sitting beside me, and you know they're grateful, and I take it back. I say, look, here's where the president of the league signs the ball. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. And I took it back. I said, look, there's where it was scuffed. That's where the bat hit the ball. So I showed him two or three things, and finally the kid goes, mister, do you want to keep the ball?
Oh.
So I still have it.
Yeah.
No.
And, I've done the same thing. A couple of people on Facebook today said, whenever I go to a game, I look around, survey the area, see if there's any kids, because I don't want to be that guy or gal. If I do get the ball and I go, yay, and there's a kid next to me, the world will it'll be tough on me if I don't do the right thing. Isn't it also possible that in the excitement of the moment, all of us are capable of doing what that guy did?
Right. It's like when the pinata breaks. You go for the gold,
I think
it's instinct.
Besides, I also think this, that suppose the guy is what you first thought. He's a lout who's not being nice to a little kid. I'm not sure that the punishment that the world is going to mete out is commensurate with the crime. That's a stupid, jerky thing to do. But really, people, give this guy a break.
Well, back in the day, you'd be a jerk and 10 or 15 people would know it.
Right.
Now, the whole world knows it, and the whole world, you feel that impact from everyone.
And it's going to catch up with you because your friends will know it. They'll share it at work. They'll share it at school. You will not be able to escape this.
Right. But that scrutiny is very interesting because before, you wouldn't be scrutinized that much for every move you make now.
You would have been a blip on TV and it would have been gone. It would not have existed in perpetuity on something called the internet.
Or someone would tell you the story and you're like, you're probably telling it a little wrong. He wasn't that bad.
312-981-7200. Your thoughts, please. 312-981-7200. Call or text WGN. Among the tweets, text, hey, John, that video clip, says 630, is an example of how fake news gets spread. From 630, John, I believe the woman gave the ball to another kid. Yeah, I heard a version of that, too. The guy has the ball, hands it to the lady. Lady gives it to a kid. They do not deserve this vilification. 847 says, even better yet, how about you people just mind your own business? Well, that's not going to happen.
And just a quick comment. The fake news might be spread, but it's also corrected by the proper sources.
What do you mean?
So, I mean, it was investigated by professionals who then had the full story.
Yeah.
So if it was just left to social media, it would potentially stay fake news.
Besides, I get your point and I get their point when they text this in. But to me, fake news, that phrase is the province of the president, and it's hostile news towards him. I know we're all talking about what's legitimate news these days, but we got to find another word for it, because what the president calls fake news is simply news critical of him and not necessarily false news. 100 events in 19 days in one epic food fest. Visit ctfoodbowl.com for the ultimate food experience in Chicago. That's this August. With the recent rainy weather we've had, on and off, PermaSeal's working hard to help homeowners across Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana, but they need your help. PermaSeal's hiring in all departments, especially sales, customer service, and installation. They're looking for people with a great work ethic who've got ambition, positive attitude, and want to learn new skills and have a desire to make the world a better, drier place. Does that sound like you? Go to permaseal.net/careers. PermaSeal.net/careers to apply today. No experience is necessary. PermaSeal will teach you to become an expert in waterproofing and foundation repair. Their experienced team of experts offers great training, year-round work, tremendous growth opportunities, and a great fun work environment. To apply, go to PermaSeal.net/careers. If you're looking for a career change or a dry basement, you can also call 1-800-421-SEAL, 1-800-421-SEAL. Let's pick up a phone line or two. Hey, Adam, this is John. You're on WGN. What's up?
How you doing?
Hey, good. What's on your mind?
Well, apparently I was one of those guys.
What happened?
Yeah, we were at a slaughter game, and we had end zone seats, and one of the guys caught a touchdown, and he's dancing, and he takes the ball, and he throws it up into the stands, and it literally came right to us. And we're all psyched, oh, we got a football, da-da-da. Well, and then all of a sudden, we started getting yelled at and booed and screamed at, and we had no idea what was going on. Well, the guy apparently tried to throw the ball to his 5-year-old son in the stands and missed it by a mile, and, you know, we didn't know what was going on. I mean, we did give the ball to the kid, but, you know, for about 2 minutes, we were the guys.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. And this was a slaughter game?
Yeah, the indoor football game.
By the way, it's an indoor football game. Okay, keep going.
You know, people just, you know, jump on you instantly, and we had no idea it was, I mean, he literally threw it right to us. So we thought, hey, we got a football. Not so much.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate you joining us, Adam. Sue, jump in there. What did you want to say? Sue, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just telling your producer that now with your show, this is the third time I've heard this story on WGN,
yeah.
And I've heard it three different ways now. Now that I heard your story, I'm like, okay, so you don't give the ball to the kid if you already got one. That's fine. But last night, as I was telling your producer,
yeah,
I was ready to fire Mark Carmen and never listen to his program again, because his attitude was the kid didn't catch the ball, he missed it, so he didn't deserve to get it. There's no participation trophy in
well,
this, so he didn't get the ball. I'm like, what an idiot you are. I'm never listening to you again.
I stopped listening to that guy years ago.
Oh my God. Oh, Carm, we have to straighten him out, because of all of the potential takes under every scenario, that's the wrong take.
How can you be? I'm like, wait till you get kids and somebody takes your kid's ball.
Oh, I'm telling you. All right, Sue. Thank you.
Work harder next time.
Thank you.
I love Mark Carmen. I'm going to listen to him forever. In fact, I'm playing tennis with him this week, so I'll make sure that he hears what you just said. But thank you for listening as much as you do to WGN. Hi. Well, here I am, just standing here talking to producer Ella. By the way, one last text about this. Violetta, you read it. I didn't.
Well, this is the biggest dilemma that came through. 608 saying, what to do if there's a smoking hot chick next to the kid?
Man, that's tough then. You're the guy with the ball.
Yeah, got to make a choice.
Do I keep it? Do I give it to the smoking hot chick?
You can't smoke in Wrigley Field anymore.
He's giving it away, but he just is not sure to who.
I'm texting Mark Carmen saying, you've got some accounting to do, young man. We're looking forward to hearing from you. We'll also talk to Jim DeRogatis, who is the object of a few lines in the new R. Kelly song. And also we'll talk to Mark Janis, who is the object of a Supreme Court ruling. stay tuned for all of that.
You know, Chance did that last week with a song. Came out against people in the, when he announced that he was buying Chicagoist.
Yeah.
And he did it in a rap song.
Oh,
and
that's
took
right.
On, he took on Cranes, and Dennis Rodkin, who'd written about him, was on my show talking about that. So it's like, it's twice in 2 weeks.
It's a new way to level the playing field or even the score or something. Lots of tweets, lots of texts about the last subject. We're wrapping it up now and moving on to Mark Janis. But before we do, I'll just highlight a couple of them. From 815, John, I felt bad for the guy when Steve Cochran threw him under the bus and then ran back and forth over him this morning. Even if the guy was a creep, maybe he didn't deserve all of that. 708 said, if a middle-aged man who never caught a ball keeps the ball, why give it to a kid who has the rest of his life to catch one? 630 said, John, my reaction was affected by the look on the woman's face who was with the child. It appeared like she made a negative comment to him. 708 says, poor kid. Hey, life's unfair. Kid has second row seats. I'd trade that anytime for some foul ball. From the 630 area code, I'm a grandma, or I am grandma aged, and I've never had a ball come near me. The couple of games I've attended each year, so I'd be thrilled if I caught a ball. It would not occur to me to give the ball to a kid who hasn't waited over 50 years for a chance. 708 says, hi, King John. Okay, now I feel bad because I slammed this guy and his lady friend on Facebook. Lesson learned. I'll try not to be so quick to judge in the future, says Carol. And finally, hey, John, my daughter at the Bozo show years ago, the arrow seemed to stop on her, but they gave it to a kid in front. Disappointed, sure. Should I have attacked Bozo so my poor baby would not be scarred for life? Go some of the texts. Mark Janis joins us again on WGN Radio. Mark, thanks for taking our call. How are you this afternoon?
Oh, fine, King John. How are you?
Really good. So do you want to opine on the baseball story at Wrigley Field yesterday? Do you know what that's all about?
No, I really didn't catch it. So I really can't comment because I don't know anything about it.
I really didn't catch it. You get it? This guy's good. Okay, never mind that then. That's not why I called you anyway. You are the object of that suit that went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And the outcome is that people don't have to pay public dues or dues to public unions anymore. What a story.
Correct.
What a case. And
yeah, it's pretty unbelievable, actually. I never really thought it was going to get that far when we first started this about 3 years ago.
Well, so last we spoke, it was right after the Supreme Court decision. And as I recall now, help me out on this, the upshot means now that public unions, if I will be able to enjoy the benefits of a public union without having to pay union dues. Is that your read on it, too?
Well, that is what the decision says, but you have to back up a little bit back to the 1980s, late 80s, when the unions asked for legislation and got a pass through the state of Illinois that asked for that all-inclusive collective bargaining. And because they asked to represent everyone, that still is the law of the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
And now that this decision has come down, you know, to use an analogy, they kind of made their bed and now they have to lie in it.
Well, the fix
to that. We fully expect they're going to probably go into the, you know, the legislation will be introduced the next session to probably negate that and have the non-paying members not part of the union bargaining.
Well, the union told us they don't want that, though. They don't want to split it up that way.
Well, that's their choice, and that's kind of what my case was all about, is giving people the choice to decide for themselves what they want to do without having to be coerced by a private entity such as a union to pay a fee just to have their jobs.
Yeah, well, I want to forward the story just a little bit here, but to be clear, the fix was supposed to be to remedy what you just said, that your dues mm-hmm. wouldn't have to go entirely towards that. You could separate some of your dues and not pay the political portion, right?
Well, that was the case, but when we asked for an accounting of that and tried to get that broken out, it basically was not available. The unions never provided it, and they could never break it down and give it to us in such a way as to how much is actually, you know, went to collective bargaining and grievances and that sort of thing. Yeah. Versus the political end. And why is it that, for example, the Chicago Teachers Union, if you're a non-member of the Chicago Teachers Union, you pay 100% or the same amount as a full union member. Now, tell me that, you know, there isn't a disparity there and that some of that 100% isn't going for political activity of some sort.
Supreme Court saw it your way, and so now if you work for a public entity in the state of Illinois and you don't want to pay union dues, you do not have to, and yet you'll enjoy the benefits of union representation. I asked you last we spoke then, well, what's it going to be like when you go back to work? And you said, well, we'll see. What was it like when you went back to work?
Pretty benign, actually. You know, walked in on the Monday after the decision, and, you know, people, the union people pretty much ignore me like they had before and never spoke. The people that I work with were, hey, how are you? Glad you're back. And, you know, business as usual. Did have a number of people in the next day or so that came up and said, thank you for what you did. And we appreciate all your efforts. And, you know, we're behind you 100%. So
I could
see, it was very positive.
Sure. I could see those people saying that. But there was no animosity, no repercussions, either from other members or union stewards. You didn't sense any direct negative backlash?
No. Not negative backlash. Well, I think the union is smart enough to realize that if there was some backlash and there was some negative, that would get some adverse publicity, obviously, in the media, and they did not want to go that direction.
Well, then you've quit your job or are quitting your job. Do I understand correctly?
That is correct, yes.
Why?
Well, because I saw that we have 22 states across the country that are now affected, you know, by this decision, and we're finding that there is a large amount of misinformation out there that we need to get corrected, and we need to let these workers know what their rights actually are under this decision and what it means for them as an individual. And so therefore we want to, you know, work to the end of getting that misinformation corrected and let people know what they can and can't do.
I'm sorry.
And go forward from here.
All right, but who's the we in this?
Well, the we is myself and the Liberty Justice Center.
Okay, but then who's going to pay you? I mean, you had a job and you've quit that job. How are you going to make up the difference?
The difference is that I've retired from the state and I'll be getting my pension from the state. And then they will pay me a salary, you know, which is equivalent to what I was making at the state.
The Liberty Foundation will?
Liberty Justice Center, yeah,
Liberty
Illinois
Justice
Policy.
Center. And
right.
So that begs this question then, Mark. Was this a genuine effort on your part all along, or were you just a foil for that side?
No, what happened was when I started this, it was based on the principle that my First Amendment rights were being stomped on. And over the years, I just did not agree with it, and I kept seeing more and more of it, and not only here in Illinois, but other states. And I felt I just had to do something about it, so we started the case, but we had no idea where it was going to go.
I understand that.
Could have just as easily gone the negative side.
Sure, Mark.
But now that we won, we're going to try to get the word out and try to make it available to all people.
If you had retired a year ago, would you have lost standing in the suit?
Yes, because I would not have been a state of Illinois employee.
So it's fair to assume you kept your job long enough to win at the Supreme Court and then they're moving on?
No, I would say that my plan all along was to retire in about another three and a half years, which is
mine too.
My plan all along, and go from there. But because this opportunity presented itself and we saw the misinformation, we felt that it was more important to get the word out and let people know what the truth is.
Well, I don't know that this is a distinction worth making, but it just seems to me like, particularly since everybody else in Illinois is going to live with what happened because of your case, it would make your case seem more genuine if you had kept the job. You were fighting for, you said, your rights here, and
mm-hmm.
then you walk away from the get you won, and then you walk away. And meanwhile, other people now are going to see maybe diminished representation by the union.
Well, I don't think they're going to see diminished representation. representation, because you're going to have the unions are still going to be out there collective bargaining. They're still going to have their membership.
You see
my
point, though, Mark.
They're still going to be able to go do that.
You see my point, though. I mean, you walk after all of that, then you walk away. I would just like a little more.
Well, you can, John, convey it any way you wish, and that you're right. That doesn't mean it's accurate, though, and doesn't mean it's true.
Well, I don't think that you and I are speaking in the same direction here, Mark. You can do whatever you want, but the timing of it, I think, is disappointing to some people, that's all.
Well, one thing you have to do, though, you have to remember, John, is the decision just came out 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we pretty much have to strike while the iron is hot and while it's fresh in the news and the media, and we need to get the word out, because if we wait, we've already seen legislation passed in California and New York and other areas of the country where they're trying to thwart this decision already. So we need to work to the end to make it a more level playing field.
I mean, it all makes sense in that you're an advocate for this position, and you are certainly a marketable force when it comes to this, that you would go on in this path. But I guess put another way, it's like you've been fighting for years for a piece of cake, and the Supreme Court has finally awarded you the cake, and you said, no, I don't want it, I'm going to quit.
Yeah. Or I want to tell other people how to get cake, but I'm not going to eat the cake myself.
Well, yeah, I'm on a diet right now, so I couldn't eat it anyway.
I shouldn't have said that. Mark, so then are you concerned about what might happen in Illinois? I mean, what's going on at the state level, and will you be involved in that at all?
It's too early to tell, John, you know, what my role here in the state is going to be, and where that is going to go. I mean, we're still in the process of ramping this up and trying to figure out, you know, what the direction is we want to go and how we're going to do it. You have to remember it's still new, and we still have to go out and look and see what, you know, potential legislation is out there, what's going to be introduced, and, you know, how we then react to that depending on what we find.
Yeah. Hey, are you going to be able to come to our Thomas Jefferson show?
When is it? I don't even know a date.
That's okay. It's Saturday, August 18th. It's at the College of DuPage.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a 10 a.m. show and a 1 p.m. show, and I can get you 2 or 4 tickets, whatever you need. But I would love it if you stood up and asked Jefferson a question.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what. If you would send that information to the lady you spoke to when we arranged this interview, she'll get me the info, and I'll definitely take a look at the schedule.
I'll put you on.
It would be interesting. I would love to attend. I've always heard about your show with Mr. Jefferson, and if you remember, Mr. Jefferson was very much in favor of the stance I took on this case.
Yeah, I want him to say that, though, to you. So let's I'm going to put you on hold, actually. Talk to Elif, and let's make sure we can connect on this, okay?
Okay, sure. Absolutely.
Congratulations, Mark, and thanks for coming on again. And you know what I'm doing this year is I am sort of peppering the audience with some people who have been noteworthy in the news lately. It'd be interesting to see what one of the founding fathers says about that issue. So, for instance, former Governor Pat Quinn he's got a petition effort out now to have term limits on the Chicago mayor. Rahm Emanuel would not be able to run for re-election if Pat Quinn is successful in the upcoming election. Mm-hmm. So we want Pat Quinn to ask a question to Mr. Jefferson about this as well. You get the idea.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay. Hold on. Talk to Elif off the air, okay?
Okay. Nice to speak with you, John.
Once again, thank you for joining us. That's Mark Janis. He was the object of that now. What would you call that, Steve? What's the word? What kind of case?
Groundbreaking?
Yeah. Precedent setting, maybe, is what I was thinking of. Jim DeRogatis said he could join us after the 2 o'clock WGN Radio News. So we'll talk to him about that R. Kelly song, which sings to Jim DeRogatis. Domati described it as a 19-minute-long track where he airs a bunch of grievances. I haven't heard it, but I heard the 4 or 5 lines that talk about it. And, he's talking to Jim DeRogatis or whatever your name is. I'll bet he knows what his name is. I'll bet he knows exactly how you say it. John, Janis bought and paid for by Rauner. Now, Janis working for Rauner supported law firm. Quid pro quo? And on go the list of people who support and don't support Mark Janis. Well, guess what? He won. So, I think fair and square. Now we just have to figure out what happens next. And he's now leaving his public job in Illinois for this association, which is going to spread the word. He said he's retiring and that the new job is going to pay him what he was making or something like that. Right. Yeah, let me see if I got all my ducks lined up. Oh, yeah. As a parent, you may have taken out a Parent Plus loan to help your child with their education. And now you're faced with huge monthly repayments that are causing major financial stress. It doesn't have to be that way. Let Kaplan Law Firm get your payments reduced by half, sometimes more. At Kaplan Law Firm, they'll let you in on the secret that your loan servicer won't. Call 312-294-8989. Call 312-294-8989 or go to financialrelief.com. Financialrelief.com. Kaplan Law Firm is a debt relief agency. They help people file for bankruptcy under the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. It's 154. Okay, good. Mark, is that Mark Carmen on line 8? Hey, Carm, this is John. How are you?
John, I'm great. Thank you for including me in the conversation.
Tread cautiously.
Well, am I getting lambasted?
Let me look that up. Yes.
Why?
Well, we've been talking, as has all America, about what happened at Wrigley Field Sunday.
Yeah.
The guy throws the ball into the stands.
Uh-huh.
Kid misses it. Guy behind him gets the ball, keeps it. Now, our understanding is that previously that guy had given a ball to the kid and to other kids as well, and he wasn't a bad guy. So everybody's
right.
Debating whether or not, you know, what happened there. What was your take on that over the weekend on WGN Radio?
Well, I made the point, John, that world is a competitive place, and you get a baseball at a baseball game when, at times, you earn the baseball. And he was thrown the baseball, and this young gentleman did not have the required skills to catch it, and so he missed it, and the ball rolled. There are consequences to missing the baseball. Sometimes in life, you don't get handed everything to you. I think there's a valuable lesson in that, so I didn't think it was the worst thing in the world what happened. I don't find any of that offensive, but I know that some do.
Yeah, but, I mean...
Oh, no, don't pacify him. Don't.
I kind of get it, though.
No, this kid wasn't 17
like, I would
years
never,
old.
I would never jump for a baseball because I don't want a baseball.
That kid is 6 years old, and he wants the baseball.
Well,
and
then he should wait till he's 12 and can catch.
But he's giving him the ball. He bobbles it. It goes under the seat. And then some bro behind him gets the ball.
Yeah, well, John... when your 8-year old asks for ice cream and then asks for another ice cream and then asks for candy bar.
How many kids do you have?
I have one niece. I'm going to claim right now.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah. So the answer to that question is zero. So someday when you have a kid and you have a sense of fairness and duty and compassion and here's a word, empathy. Do you have a thesaurus handy or a dictionary? Look up empathy. Kevin, can you tell me what empathy is? You're in sports.
I can't, but I feel like this conversation ends when we found out that the guy gave the ball a kid earlier.
Yeah, right. I mean, so that's...
So I guess Carmen's argument's a little bit different, that the kid needs to learn how to catch it.
Right. It's almost a different ball. It's a different conversation, right?
I mean,
I get that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what was funny is he didn't even have to go in that direction, and he chose that harder route.
Like, Carm, you only buried yourself.
You didn't put yourself in a corner, brother. It also feels very un-Carmen-like to me. This is not an angle I would anticipate Carmen going, where you were the one I believe I had a conversation with where you were kind of knocking the, you know, it's all about winning in America, and that's too much. This sort of seems like the non-Carmen take I'm used to.
Yeah, Carm, yeah.
Well, so first of all, I appreciate the fact that I don't think I've ever heard you this angry, certainly not this angry at me, so I'm a little on my heels here. Look, there is nuance, there are gray areas in everything here.
All right, time's up.
Time's up.
Says, hey, John, I don't think I have ever agreed with Mark Carmen before, but go Carm on this one at least. So there is some love out there for you.
Time's up. It's not fair. You don't get an equal amount of time.
Yeah, guess what? Life isn't fair, Carm, so we're not going to hear your full story.
Hey, that's the way it goes. That's why I had to make my point as quickly as I could at the start, and now I get kicked off the show.
Are we playing on Wednesday, by the way? Are we playing at Wednesday?
Yes, 4:30. I've got great tips for you from my tennis camp experience, and I can't wait to see what you've learned. That's going to be a great afternoon.
This is just him getting in your head before the match.
I said great. I just finished beginner's level 1 and 2 lessons at Tennis on the Lake by the Park District. So I'm feeling real good about my game. I go, Carm, let's play. He goes, yeah, I just got back from tennis camp. Are you kidding me?
Who goes to tennis camp?
What are you, 10? I mean, tennis camp?
I was playing, John, against actually 10 to 18 years old. I was me and my girlfriend were the only adults in the camp, but they allow adults in there. I don't know why anybody else didn't show up. That's their fault. I had a great time.
Carmen, I'm still supporting your dream of someday becoming a ball boy at the U.S. Open.
I'm all for that. Time's up. I got to stop talking.
Thank you, Kevin.
Bye, Carmen. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
All right. Bye-bye. See you later.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Sometimes.
Here's John Williams.
I farm it out. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago, on social media. You can find me at WGN King John. That's on Facebook, Twitter, and Insta, WGN King John. You'll always find the news click there, a daily web poll question. Today we ask, what do you think of what happened to Wrigley Field on Sunday with the kid, the guy, the ball, and the social media? You know, I just got a book, 10 Reasons Why You Should Give Up Social Media. And I started to read it and put it down because I was so involved in my Twitter account. But the guy makes some really good points, and I'll talk more about that later this week. And I'm not kidding. He said it's killing your soul, your addiction to social media. It is something that we all have. There's a new R. Kelly song out. LF, let's sample a little of the new R. Kelly song.
To Jim C. Ricardis or whatever your name is.
Whatever your name.
You've been trying to destroy me for 25 whole years.
25 whole years.
Writing the same stories over and over and over again. Off my name, you done went and made yourself a career.
That's R. Kelly criticizing Jim DeRogatis, the longtime Chicago journalist on the music scene, now the music critic and Sound Opinions co-host. And Jim joins us on WGN. Welcome back, Jim. How are you?
Good, John. How are you? It's been an interesting Monday.
Yeah, what's your day been like? Tell me about that.
R. Kelly's released numerous songs over the years in which he pleads forgiveness for unnamed sins. He gets a little closer to kind of naming them in this song. It's 19 minutes long. He talks about liking women young and old, and of course he takes that shot at me. He says, I've made a career for 25 years. My first story ran in December 2000 with Abdon Palish on the front page of the Chicago Sun-Times. That's 18 years. What happened 25 years ago? Allegedly, according to a publicly filed legal suit against Kelly, he went back to Kenwood Academy and picked up a 15-year-old sophomore in the class taught by gospel legend Lena McLean, who also is mentioned in this song, and he began a sexual relationship with her that ended when he dumped her and she slit her wrists. He paid that young woman. There have been 3 underage women who filed suit against Kelly who paid. He paid with cash settlements in return for non-disclosure agreements of the sort made famous recently by Harvey Weinstein. There was the Aaliyah marriage. There was a suit he paid off by a legal age dancer who he videotaped having sex without her knowledge. And then there have been numerous settlements struck by Susan Loggins, a Chicago attorney who has represented. She won't specify how many. She only says numerous. Underage women who came to her. She would send them to suburban Hinsdale to take a lie detector test. She'd present the evidence to Kelly. He'd pay them off, and they'd sign a non-disclosure agreement. And then in the last year, July 17th was the first story I wrote for BuzzFeed News. We have 5 parents who have spoken on the record saying their daughters are part of a cult and brainwashed. Those are the words they use. Those are the words they've filed in police reports in 3 states and told the FBI. And those girls are held against their will and must follow Kelly's rules or they're physically and mentally punished, according to all of these sources on the record. So when he's saying he's misunderstood, he's had a hard life, he's asking our indulgence and forgiveness, I think the scope of the charges made against him for 18 years, none of my reporting ever refuted. I think, John, as a student of popular music history, I don't think there's been anything like it in the whole history of music. I mean, Michael Jackson was accused by two underage boys. And we have, you know, Chuck Berry and Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis Presley. I think that the charges against Kelly dwarf these in full view of the world as he sold 65 million records.
The new song is I Admit, and it's a 19-minute long explanation or counter. He's got all of these grievances and he's singing them out. Are you at all interested in reviewing it musically, or is it maybe impossible for you to do that?
I'm really busy working on yet another story.
About R. Kelly?
Yeah, which I can't really talk about yet.
Fair enough. But before we go any further with this, can you just catch us up on his story? Has he been convicted of any of these criminal charges? Has he been convicted of any criminal charges?
He was tried on charges of 21 counts, later dropped to 14 counts of making child pornography. It broke all records in Cook County for the longest time between the indictment and the trial. The indictment was June of 2002, and he was tried and acquitted in 2008. The trial was heard by Judge Vincent Gaughan, who was about to hear the Laquan McDonald trial. The girl in the video, 26 minutes and 39 seconds, her mother and her father never testified. But 14 witnesses testified for the prosecution and identified the girl, including her aunt and her uncle and her best friends and her best friend's parents and her minister and basketball coach. Some of them were Chicago police officers. The FBI authenticated the tape. He was acquitted because the girl didn't testify. But Judge Gaughan held numerous hearings that were in Star Chamber. The records remain sealed to the public to this day. Damon Dunn, an incredible First Amendment attorney in Chicago, sued and tried to get those hearings released, and he lost in the appellate court. But he represented WBEZ, Chicago Public Radio, the Sun-Times, and the Chicago Tribune. Judge Gaughan likes to do things in closed chambers without a public record, and he likes to trample on the reporter's privilege and First Amendment rights of a reporter. So he compelled me to take the stand during Kelly's trial, just as he compelled the journalist who got the video of Officer Van Dyke allegedly killing Laquan McDonald to take the stand. Judge Gaughan's a bad actor. I will say that, and if he wants to hold me in contempt of court all these years after the trial, then I will happily go to Cook County Jail.
R. Kelly said that he was abused himself at the age of 14. Is that,
None of this is new. In Solar Coaster, My Diary of Me, his alleged autobiography, ghostwritten by David Ritz, published by Tavis Smiley, Solar Coaster, The Diary of Me. You know, he talks about sexual abuse by a woman and also by a man in the neighborhood, which I reported at greater length with Adam Palish in the Sun-Times. You know, he's had a hard life. He claims to be dyslexic, cannot read, cannot write, did not graduate from Kenwood Academy. And, you know, he had this abuse in his background, he says. Does that, John, excuse bringing it forward and leaving dozens easily who have been on the record, and we do not know how many off the record, of young women devastated? Many of the young women who sued him tried to commit suicide after settling, after he ended their relationships. These are in public court documents. And the testimony during the trial, should you want to spend $5,000 to read the transcript, was amazing. I mean, you know, the allegations of him brainwashing young women and physically and mentally abusing young women all came out in open court, but he was acquitted just a couple of weeks ago. His wife of 9 years, Andrea Kelly, the former Andrea Lee, said that he beat her during their 9-year marriage. You know, what's astounding to me is in March, Time's Up, the movement anti-sexual harassment of a particular group in the movement of black celebrities, Shonda Rhimes, Ava DuVernay, John Legend, Questlove, Tarana Burke, the founder of hashtag MeToo, put out a statement demanding law enforcement investigations and action by the industry that has enabled him. And they named Apple Music, Spotify, RCA, Sony Records, Ticketmaster. There has been no action. We have seen many men fall in Hollywood, you know, Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein, in media, Charlie Rose, and even at Fox News, Bill O'Reilly, in sports. And yet the music industry has not reckoned with R. Kelly, despite these many, many young women whose lives.
How do you explain that? Why?
I've been writing about rock and roll since I was 16, 15, and I have a tattoo with the Velvet Underground. And, you know, Lou Reed sang about your life saved by rock and roll. And I wonder, this is me waxing as the critic and the college professor now, I wonder if your life can be saved by this art, if it can also be ruined by it. If there is some thrill, illicit and disgusting, in co-signing, as the kids say, this man's art, because he's confessed in public in the art. I mean, the album he recorded, wrote, and titled for Aaliyah was Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. And he had a sexual relationship with her at age 15, and he married her under a falsified Cook County marriage certificate. And this is 1996. The first girl was 1994, you know, that he mentions 25 years ago. You know, he's gotten away with it in full view of the world, allegedly, for his entire career. And it's only now, you know, I'm a fat white rock critic. You know me, you know, I think elements of the black community in Chicago, most vociferously. I mean, go back and read the dozen columns that Mary Mitchell, my former Sun Times colleague, has written. Go and look at the statement Time's Up put out. Look at what Tarana Burke has said. Look at what, you know, the hashtag Mute R. Kelly movement.
What do they all have in common? What do they all say?
They're all black women who say enough is enough.
Leave this guy alone. Stop persecuting or prosecuting.
No. They're saying law enforcement, investigate him. They're saying music industry, stop enabling him. Finally, I think there is a groundswell of public support against him. And that's why we have a 19-minute mea culpa of sorts, playing on people's sympathy. I can't read. I can't write. I was abused. Everybody is after my money. Please feel sorry for me.
The new song is I Admit. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, but you know, look, I mean, you know, you want the names in the public record. They're Tiffany Hawkins and Montina Woods and Patrice Jones and Tracy Sampson and Aaliyah Dana Houghton and Geronda Johnson from Streamwood and Lizette Martinez from Miami. You know, those are just a few of the names that have been on the record or who have sued him. There are many more. You know, and I, you know, he has a 19-minute mea culpa to the world, but those women have been speaking out now since the first Sun Times story in 2000, and nobody's listening to them, John.
Jim DeRogatis is on the line. He is the music critic and Sound Opinions co-host, and he is the object in part of this song by R. Kelly, I Admit, goes 19-plus minutes, and in it he admits things, but he's still really mad at you, whatever your name is.
Well, you know, I appear in the pages of Solar Coaster. I believe he knows my name. I appear in the book, but Aaliyah does not.
One last thing. So did you get a heads up about this, or how did you find out?
No. When I said it's been interesting Monday morning, I woke up and I had a message from Instagram. And I get up early. I'm an old man. You know how you can't sleep late like you used to when you were a teen?
I do.
And, you know, there it was. I'm like, oh, this is going to be interesting. You know, for the record, he says I made a career out of it and I'm rich. I am not rich. I'll invite you over for burgers some night. And also, I've done a lot else. I mean, you know, Sound Opinions airs on 118 public radio stations and has for 660 weeks.
You don't
250,000. I teach at Columbia College Chicago. I have 300 freshmen starting in a couple of weeks in a class called Music and Media in Chicago. And I've written 11 books. I've done some other crap.
Yeah, I don't think you need to worry about that. That's just him throwing stuff against the wall. But it's interesting, too, because we've had a couple of instances now in the last week where hip-hop or rap stars have made news by things they've announced in their songs, right? Chance said he was going to buy the Chicagoist, and R. Kelly's...
Yeah.
Throwing you under the bus, if nothing else.
It's very disappointing to me. I think Chance the Rapper is one of the most important voices out of Chicago since Curtis Mayfield. But Chance has twice recorded with R. Kelly, and he brought him on stage at Lollapalooza since 2015. You know, and so you have this thing in the black community where, yes, many black women are now speaking out. They're sick and tired of it. But other stars are still not talking out or are actively working with Kelly.
All right, I'll let you get back to the rest of your day and all the social media that is eating you up today. I don't mean that negatively. I mean, it's just a fascinating story, and I think it's just getting started with the release of the
film. Well, you know, I've been talking to another woman who is eager to tell her story. And that's what, Twitter is all, Twitter's a game, right? And sitting for how many hours with this woman already, and if she decides to come on the record, that's not a game, and it's not fun, and it's not a career. But I don't think you're a journalist, John, if these people call and they say, I've been hurt and I have a story to tell, you're not a journalist and you're not a human being if you don't listen.
Jim DeRogatis does. My best to you. We'll be listening to you and reading you as well. I'm thinking about signing up for the class now, Jim, so thanks for your time.
It's a good class. You know, we talk about Chaka Khan and we talk about Curtis Mayfield.
All right. I'll get the syllabus.
All right.
Jim, thanks for your time this afternoon.
You bet. Bye.
Stay well. All right. Here we go. Even by Donald Trump's standards, this was a remarkable Twitter weekend. Among the things the President of the United States tweeted, quote, the summit with Russia was a great success, except with the real enemy of the people, the fake news media. He also tweeted, I got severely criticized by the fake news media for being too nice to President Putin. In the old days, they would call that diplomacy. He also tweeted, the NFL national anthem debate is alive and well again. First time kneeling, out for the game. Second time kneeling, out for the season. No pay. And then he tweeted, it's inconceivable that the government would break into a lawyer's office. This is Michael Cohen, his former lawyer. Early in the morning, almost unheard of. The good news is that your favorite president did nothing wrong. A lot of people tweeted back at him, yeah, Obama's clear. Anyway, then he tweeted about the rigged witch hunt. Then he tweeted again, no collusion, no obstruction. Democrats want this witch hunt to drag out until the November election. He tweeted about 12 times over the weekend about Hillary Clinton and the dossier. He tweeted about North Korea. He has tweeted about Washington Post and Amazon and how he doesn't like those companies. But the most curious of his tweets is this. To Iranian President Rouhani, never, all capital letters now, never, ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious. Cecile Shea joins us on WGN Radio. She's a senior fellow on global security and diplomacy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Cecile, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
Good. So what do you do? What do you typically study or follow over there?
You know, I had a 26-year career in the State Department as a diplomat all around the world. So I kind of look at foreign policy in the totality. In other words, how is the U.S. foreign policy making this country safer or sometimes making this country less safe? And that's everything from tariffs in the economy to where our forces are stationed around the world. And it's because everything works in concert. You know, you can't just talk about a single item when you're talking about American security. You have to look at the totality of our policies.
What do you make of the president's tweet there?
Well, yeah, it was really troubling. And, you know, as you pointed out, he tweeted a lot of different things just this morning. I mean, not just all weekend. And he seems to be under considerable pressure, both domestically and in other ways. This specific tweet seems to have been in response to a speech that President Rouhani made yesterday, where he threatened the U.S. with the mother of all wars if the U.S. fulfills its promise to take Iranian oil exports down to zero. And, you know, this is the kind of phrase that Iran has been using for, you know, 30 or 40 years now since the revolution about the U.S. They shouldn't do it. It's perfectly acceptable for a president to point out that they shouldn't speak this way. But to threaten war the way the president was doing in all caps, as you pointed out, in Twitter without consulting with anyone first, I mean, that just doesn't make the world any safer, and it certainly doesn't make it any more likely that we're going to come to some kind of way forward with Iran on these problems that we have between our two countries.
That the tweet was directed directly at the president of Iran also sort of ignores the fact that he has every means, diplomatic and private, to express this, however strongly, to the president of Iran without publicly broadcasting it, doesn't he?
That's true. And he can't even say, well, you know, it was directed at the people of Iran because Iran blocks Twitter. So it's not like people woke up or it would be the afternoon in Iran. You all around Iran saw this tweet today. They have heard about it, I'm sure, through the news media or through Voice of America or something in the meantime. But yeah, this isn't, you know, this isn't the way you get things done. It's like if you have a problem with your neighbor, you don't tweet about your neighbor, right? Your first instinct should not be to broadcast to the entire world that you're sick of his leaf blower. I mean, your first instinct should be to go and talk to him or to perhaps find someone who gets along with your neighbor better than you do and see if he might work as an intermediary for you, which is what we've done with some success with Iran over the years.
Yeah.
But this kind of bellicose rhetoric, this just increases the likelihood that there's going to be some kind of mistake made somewhere along the line.
This may be beside the point, but in fact, these days people do, rather than tell the individual, broadcast to the world that they're upset with the neighbor's leaf blower. But when Iran's...
Or they call 911.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. That's another sidebar. Yeah. But I mean, when Iran says something like that, as upsetting as that might be, we're sort of used to it, and they're somewhat powerless about that. And when the president tweets something insane like this, I almost put it in the same box. That's just hot air, and there's not going to be anything as a result. Should we read it that way?
That is the exact problem. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that is the exact problem, because no one takes President Trump's tweets or his words or the things that he says at these rallies, you know, seriously anymore. And so there's two risks to that. One is we've lost the power of the spoken word around the world because the president doesn't have as much influence as he should. And secondly, if he ever really means what he says, no one's going to take him seriously. And that's a really dangerous situation when you're talking about the person who controls the U.S. nuclear arsenal. So you know, I mean, it's a big problem. And you compare it to someone who was very reserved. Some people thought too reserved, but someone who was very reserved, like President Obama, you know, when he threatened to completely destroy North Korea if North Korea ever used nuclear weapons, everybody believed that he would do it because he just didn't speak that way very often. And that's really the way that the president should use his bully pulpit. It's like Teddy Roosevelt said, you know, speak softly and carry a big stick. And the big stick for President Trump is the U.S. military.
Well, all right, this argument, though, this latest exchange between the United States and Iran, and essentially that's what it is, even though it's crazy Donald Trump going on without even the consent of his own administration. It is kind of an interesting disconnect, isn't it? Is this the policy of the United States, or is this just the thoughts of the leader of the United States, which is not the same as the U.S. position on these issues, right?
Yeah, and we've already gotten into trouble on the Iran issue, you know, within July already. I think it was the second week of July, where first an unknown person at the State Department briefed the media that we expected every country in the world to stop importing or exporting Iranian oil by the beginning of November, or we were going to place massive sanctions on those countries. And so the price of oil skyrocketed. I don't know if you remember that a couple weeks ago, the price of oil skyrocketed and the president tweeted again, don't worry, I'm asked the Saudis to produce more oil. But then what eventually had to happen was the State Department had to walk back the statement and say, oh, we didn't really mean it. We want countries to import and export a lot less Iranian oil, but we're willing to work with countries, and November is not a hard deadline. So again, we just lose all credibility. If one day we come out and threaten to do X, and this was apparently a somewhat coordinated effort between somebody at the State Department and somebody at the White House, and then we turn around a week later and say, oh, no, we didn't realize that the price of oil would skyrocket like this, whereas any economist could have told them that that was exactly what was going to happen. And they had to walk back their threat. And so now no one really knows what the U.S. policy is on the issue of purchasing Iranian oil. So and by the way, this isn't just a matter for Iran. If you're the crazy guy running North Korea right now, to use a highly diplomatic term to describe him, but if you're him and you're watching what the president has done with Iran, which is we signed a deal with Iran, Iran was abiding with the deal in terms of lowering its number of nuclear capabilities, and then the president tore up the deal and is now threatening to go to war with them, why would you negotiate a similar deal that Iran had with the U.S. if it just means that the president's going to tear it up a year later?
Cecile Shea's on the phone line. She's with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. But what is this argument with Iran about right now? Is it about the nuclear agreement? Is it about oil? What are we fighting with them about, at least over the Twitterverse about here?
Over the Twitterverse, I mean, that's a really good question. So we have a number of big problems with Iran. They are supporting insurgents in Syria. They've always supported Hezbollah in Lebanon from the beginning. They are very active on routes through Iraq. I mean, they really control an increasing amount of Iraq. And so that's a problematic. They continue to support terrorist groups to a certain degree, not as much as they did 20 years ago, but they still do, and certainly inside of Syria. You know, they have an atrocious human rights record, absolutely atrocious. And they continue to work on their various ballistic missile programs, which would allow them to fire medium-range missiles with a considerable distance. They can already reach Israel, but they would be able to fire missiles at a considerable distance. So we have a significant number of complaints with Iran in addition to its nuclear program. And President Trump's complaint about the nuclear agreement was that it only dealt with the nuclear issues, and it did not deal with these wide-ranging and other serious issues. But it was never meant to deal with all of the others. So we had certain rewards and punishments in place for scaling back their nuclear program and allowing inspectors in to make sure that they were abiding by the agreement. And, you know, the host of world nations, I mean, this agreement involved all of our closest allies and all of the largest countries in the world. We thought that in and of itself was a worthy goal. But the U.S. never stopped the pressure on all of the other items, and we've continued sanctions and punishments on Iran on everything else. But the president wasn't able to kind of divide those two issues. He wasn't able to say, okay, we're going to work on nuclear issues separate from human rights and support of insurgent groups in Iraq and other places. And so... That was one of the reasons that he abrogated the agreement, although, frankly, he clearly doesn't like inheriting any agreements from President Obama, and that seems to have played a part in it also.
Well, we pulled out of the Iran nuclear agreement, and you're saying that it was accomplishing at least its stated goals or was working in that direction? You felt like
Everyone agreed that it was. Yeah. Everyone agreed that it was you know, meeting its goals. Now, there have been some reports out of Israel and some other places the last month or two saying that their missile program is further ahead than we thought, that they had been further ahead in their nuclear program. But, you know, it's all the more reason to get inspectors in there and to keep the pressure up, because there is no, and all of the president's people have told him this time and time again, there is no military solution on Iran. Their military is powerful. Their nuclear facilities, which they have now turned off, and it does appear that they are continuing to abide by the agreement, but they are very well fortified. There is no military solution to dealing with Iran at this point. So as difficult as it is and as frustrating it is, we have to find other levers to push with them.
To the Iranian president, never, ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious. You know, the first part of that can only be interpreted as we're going to drop nuclear bombs on you. And we're not going to do that.
Or some kind of massive conventional weapons. And we're not. We're not going to do either of those things. I can't imagine Congress approving it. We certainly, I mean, this is an enormous military. If you've read any history, you know that going to war with the Persian Empire has never been a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a proud country. It's a country that we need to figure out a way to move forward with. You know, it's wealthy in terms of oil, to be sure, but they also have a wonderful culture, a highly educated populace. We have an enormous Iranian diaspora in our country. And at some point, if we could just, move forward somehow and encourage Iran, the moderates in Iran, and somehow find ways to encourage democracy in Iran. And I know it sounds like a pipe dream at this point, but it will just make the whole world so much safer, and it will make our lives so much richer.
Cecile Shea is over at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. What an interesting resource you are, Cecile. I appreciate your time. Let's visit again down the road.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
We're getting ready for Rokan and Anna DeVlantis. I'm not reading right now, M-I-L-F. By the way, I hope you had a real nice weekend. I was so excited. Elif was going to go to the beach on Saturday. I suspect she didn't with the wind and the rain and the fact that you couldn't swim in the beaches. They were closed for swimming.
Yeah, I said, the heck with that, and I made other plans.
I made plans. I put on my swimsuit, my red, white, and blue American flag swim trunks. And then I put on my long sleeve swimming shirt. And I got on my bicycle with my helmet and mouth guard. And I rode over to the beach.
Okay.
And when I got there, they said, nope, you can't swim in the beach.
Why did you go in 70-degree weather anyway?
Because, the water is going to be pretty much the same temperature. So
that's true.
It's not going to change that much. So I was all set to go in. And the surf is up. I know that the beaches of Chicago have been very dangerous this year, and they are every summer with the riptides and the undertows and the strong waves. I wanted to go swimming at the damn beach. It looked like so much fun when you have a little bit of wave action there.
But you're going to be even colder when you come out. Think about that.
I want to go swimming. So then I thought, oh, fine, I'll go swimming Sunday. Sunday, the beaches were closed as well. As Ro likes to point out, we have 13 weekends of the winter, and you so count on every day you can get out of them, and you couldn't get much out of this weekend. So that was a big, fat bummer. There was one other thing I was going to mention about that. Now it escapes my eye here. By the way, Violetta, were you at the beaches this weekend?
No. I went out to the suburbs. I have a wine club that I'm a part of. So...
That's fun.
It was perfect weather for drinking.
There's two good words together, wine and club. We went to Beatnik. Have you guys been to Beatnik, Kevin? Have you been to Beatnik yet?
But it's on my list of restaurants.
Wow.
As a foodie,
I've never heard of it.
They opened one on the river now, too, right? The Beatnik on the Riverwalk?
This isn't that one. But
right,
Beatnik is a restaurant. We went there for brunch. It is such a cool interior.
That's what I hear.
Such a cool scene.
But how was the food? Because sometimes it's these trendy spots, and they're known because everybody takes Instagrams of the interior and the food's just...
We were doing that.
Was the food great, though?
We were sending out pictures of the place, loving it before we'd even had a bite to eat.
Right.
I'm not kidding. So then, here's how they do it. It's one of those places they go, okay, four of us, we all order. And they say, okay, just so you know, your food's not going to come out at the same time. When the food's ready, we send it out. We don't wait for all four because then one of them is sitting there getting warm or cold or whatever. Some restaurants do that. I don't know that I love that as a plan.
I definitely don't.
Because they said we recommend that you all share.
Like a tapa style.
But it's not. That's the point. So if you got a burger, it's a burger for one. And then you cut it into fours and share it with your friends. But it's not really share ready. The first dish they sent out was a fried rice with a duck egg on top. And some vegetables and some sausage and all mixed in together. It was one of the most delicious things I have ever had. Oh, my God, I want more of that. You get the fried rice at Beatnik. And the cocktails, really good.
Wait, I just looked up this place. It looks so cute.
Isn't it fun? Yeah. It's not bad.
I feel so out of the loop.
It wasn't insanely expensive either. It wasn't cheap, but we thought we got our money's worth out of Beatnik. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, how was your weekend?
Well, you know what? Okay,
I heard you just crediting my incredible wisdom about the 13 weeks of summer.
I like that, though. You put that in your brain, and it makes you just live every moment, because it comes down to 13. That's not a lot.
Yep. So what you do, it sounds like you were able to salvage it, John, but what you have to do is you got to go out and pretend it's not raining.
And that's I did that a lot. I got rained on a lot.
I stood in the rain during, you know, like in the middle of a golf swing, and I was like, it was like the scene from Caddyshack. God will not interrupt the round of my life.
I don't think the hard stuff's going to come down for a while.
That was exactly what it was like.
I went on a rave runner, too, and it was raining. But, like, you're getting wet anyway. Why does it matter?
Right.
I went in a swimming pool, but you're getting wet anyway.
Right.
So just, it's easy to pretend it's
not
raining.
When I could not get into the water over the weekend, I went over and looked at the rental stand for the wave runners. And it's like $90 a half hour, right? And then they have $10 upcharge if you put another person on there, or maybe you get two. Should I do that? Was it worth it? It's so fun, but this
weekend was so rocky. I mean, unless you're really like a daredevil, it wasn't my favorite.
Well, what happens if you fall off? Is it easy to get back on?
Yeah, because it just, it just pulls right. Your hand is connected to the little, it's got a wire that attaches.
It's pretty hard to fall off. It almost happened to me and my daughter
this
in Mexico.
This weekend it happened twice to people in our group. But they
fell
being,
off?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did they fall off?
I fell off when it wasn't moving.
One just all of a sudden, they had like three people on it. And so it weights it different if someone leans to one side or, it's sort of.
Lean to the same side.
Yeah.
You're going under.
Well, I told my wife, I said, we don't have to go real fast. We could go slower and we're not taking hard turns and jumping waves. It would be fun to putz around.
Pretty exhilarating when you it's just fun.
You went out on the lake or were you on the river?
We're on the lake. Yeah.
I want to tell you something about jumping a wave in it, because I have done that. Mm-hmm. And when it lands, it thuds on the water and then you thud on it. there's you're not prepared for it. And your back's really not prepared for it. There's a lot of things that it doesn't have a shock absorber. It's not like a motorcycle or a bike or a car. There's no shock absorber. You land and it's just not all good. But they are a lot of fun. I go between 5 and 7 miles an hour, and I enjoy it.
Old man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm taking up a lot of your time here. I hope you have a really good show.
Thank you, John. All right.
I'll get out of your way, Ro.